Okay, I'm going to let Steve Miller handle the introductions for this panel.
Good evening. Chairman Probert, members of the board, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with you tonight. I really very much do appreciate that. To my right is Islesboro Shellfish Warden Andrew Coombs. Moving down the line is realtor and small business owner Bill Warren. Islesboro CEO and boatyard manager Bill Boardman. Islesboro PA and emergency medical expert Allie Wood. And at the end is Islesboro Selectman Arch Gillies. My name is Steve Miller, and I am from Islesboro. I'm the executive director of Islesboro Islands Trust. Our panel will try to fairly quickly discuss three things: ways in which the proposed LPG facility will affect the health, safety, and welfare of the people of Searsport and the entire region, the threats to Searsport and Penobscot Bay natural resources, and impacts to our economy and our way of life. I would like to let you know that I'm a lifelong resident of Maine. The past 38 years of those have been on Islesboro. I've been executive director of Islesboro Islands Trust, whose mission includes acting as an environmental advocate on behalf of Islesboro and the surrounding Penobscot Bay region since 1985. Prior to becoming the full-time director in 1998, I ran a small landscape and land management business, helped create and was the first president of Islesboro Affordable Property, and taught a horticulture vocational class. I was a volunteer EMT for the Islesboro Ambulance Service in the 80s, then worked on all four Islesboro comprehensive plans, including acting as comprehensive plan committee chair. I've also, especially as you, Chairman Probert, know, have spent quite a bit of time on Sears Island issues over the since 1989. I'd like to first talk a bit about the Planning Board authority. The Planning Board has the authority. I'm sure you actually know this, but I think it's worth, or we think it's worth repeating, the authority and the responsibility under your ordinances to consider our concerns about the impacts to health, safety, and welfare of humans and impacts to natural resources, including their economic value. This authority and responsibility flows from the following Searsport ordinances and the development review ordinance purpose. It says, in part, development or changes in the uses of land can cause a profound impact upon the cost and efficiency of municipal services and upon the environment of the town. Such development can impact open space, property values, water quality, the aesthetic and visual characteristics of the neighborhood and town, and the general health, safety, and welfare of the community. It is the purpose of this ordinance to control such impacts when caused by development. And under the land use ordinance, there are three parts of the purpose I think are particularly relevant to our panel presentation tonight. The first has to do with implementing the policies and recommendations of the comprehensive plan in the land use ordinance. And secondly, protection of the general welfare to assure the comfort, convenience, safety, health, and welfare of the present and future inhabitants of the town of Searsport is a purpose of the land use ordinance, and also to protect and enhance the natural, cultural, and historic resources of the town from unacceptable adverse impacts. The land use ordinance goes on to say in section 5A, all proposed development shall be in conformity with the comprehensive plan and policy statements of the town contained within the plan. A couple of relevant portions of the comp plan include on in section A on page 2, to protect the state's critical natural resources as part of your plan and part of your ordinance. To protect the state's marine resource industries is also in that same section. And then that section goes on to actually list and therefore incorporate into your comprehensive plan nine state coastal policies. I'll just mention a couple. One is to preserve and improve the ecological integrity and diversity of marine communities and habitats. Another is to enhance the economic value of the state's renewable marine resources. Another incorporated into your comprehensive plan considers the cumulative effects of development on coastal resources. To discourage growth and new development in coastal areas where it is hazardous to human health. To encourage and support cooperative state and municipal management of coastal resources. To protect and manage critical habitat and natural areas. To restore and maintain the quality of our fresh marine and estuarine waters to allow for the broadest possible diversity of public and private uses. And then finally, in the comprehensive plan in Section K, it says, comprehensive planning recognizes the importance of regional cooperation. The land uses in one community can impact another community, particularly when that land use is located near the boundaries of the town. So I would just like to kind of underscore the point that the land use ordinance requires that all proposed development be in conformity with the comprehensive plan. And the comprehensive plan, among other things, says that regional cooperation is important. The proposed LPG facility introduces risk to Sears Port in the region. That is actually indisputable. Determining or deciding whether this increased risk is acceptable requires a thorough look at the extent of the risk and the many, many forms of danger the LPG tank and tankers pose. But I'd like to say that this testimony tonight should be considered interim in nature, and it may well change with the release of the Good Harbor Study. What we will do is consider particular Islesboro concerns that are regional, but that overlap with and incorporate local Sears Port interests. Earlier in these proceedings, Council for DCP claimed that the proposed LPG facility is not a regional matter. We would contend that the proposed facility is both a regional and a local matter. Searsport's economy and the regional economy are intimately related. The natural resources of the bay know no boundaries. The risks posed by this facility would affect Searsport residents, certainly, but many well beyond Sears Port as well. The authority in charge of the planning board described in those ordinances that I cited earlier make it immensely evident that local law anticipated regional impacts and regional cooperation. I would like to sort of point out that it's become evident to us that Islesboro Islands Trust, but Islesboro generally, in fact, actually many or most people in the Penobscot region, have a different perspective on the proposal than does DCP. On Tuesday, when I was here, Mr. Baldridge described his corporation's long-standing commitment to New England. Mr. Baldridge's statements made more than once that he stated that DCP has a long history in New England going back 15 years. That struck me. A long history going back 15 years. 15 years for DCP is a long history. My wife's family has lived on Islesboro for 7 generations. That's more than 250 years. And that, I would say, is a long history. LPG tankers in the bay. So we have a different perspective, and I think it's useful to kind of keep that in mind. There will be different perspectives described, and it isn't as if there's only one. LPG tankers in the bay, LPG tankers at Mack Point, LPG 22.7 million. I don't necessarily need to go through all this, but these do pose a risk that does not exist today. It isn't as if there are no risks in anybody's life today, but these are risks associated with this development that simply are not existent today. The Coast Guard acknowledged that in their review of this and said the potential for severe consequences as a result of release of LPG does exist. And that a fire of any magnitude, and this is a quote, would be catastrophic to the immediate area. You'll see as an exhibit one of the illustrations from the Coast Guard's review, which shows the zones of concern. Those zones of concern are described in that report, and you will notice that there are several, and they cover quite a large area, including Searsport, or parts of Searsport. The Coast Guard says further that the capability to respond appropriately to an LPG emergency does not currently exist in the Penobscot region. I'm going to try to just skip ahead a little bit because I do understand that there's a sense of urgency to wrap things up for the weather and all. What I really do want to spend at least a little bit of time talking about is the need for dredging. You will see in your packet a couple of exhibits. We have learned from DCP that the typical LPG tanker expected to call at the proposed facility requires 39.7 feet of water. That's the draft. 39.7. Tankers are expected, according to DCP, to be at the dock from 36 to 48 hours. In 2007, the Army Corps issued a report, which is included as an exhibit in your handouts. In 2007, the Army Corps said that it was unsafe to bring deep draft tankers into Mack Point because of depth restrictions. And I'm going to quote, "The existing controlling depths in the Searsport Channel are inadequate for existing and future vessel traffic. There are potential safety concerns related to maneuvering the larger ships in the current federal channel." I also have learned that, and many of you may already know, that the captain of the port, in conjunction with others, developed minimum under keel clearance for vessel traffic in Penobscot Bay. What we have learned is that the under keel clearance, or UKC, is 3 feet in the outer Penobscot Bay, south of Turtle Head. It's 2 feet in the bay around Turtle Head and north, and it's 1 foot at all dock and mooring locations. 1 foot added to the draft of a typical vessel would put you at 40.7 feet. According to the Army Corps of Engineers, October 2012 sounding data, this is very recent, there's a copy in the exhibits. I couldn't read it the scale that was available, so I enlarged certain portions of that. But that information is actually all in that one, or those two exhibits from the sounding data for the Army Corps of Engineers in October of this year. It did show that approaches to Mack Point provide depth of only 31 feet in some places. But what I really want to emphasize is that water depth at the pier does not meet Coast Guard standards for underkeel clearance because of numerous high spots. The Army Corps of Engineers sounding data shows depths as low as 34.9 feet in areas adjacent to the eastern side of the pier, which is where the typical LPG tankers are expected to tie up. And that is considerably less than 40.7 feet of depth. LPG tankers will be at the dock for more than a tide cycle. They'll come in at high tide, presumably, but they will have to be there for low tide, according to representations from the applicant.
Excuse me, Mr. Miller. I just want to put on the record, Mr. Chairman, as you had said earlier, what Mr. Miller is describing now is not something that you addressed.
This uninterrupted testimony? I think there's a connection.
One person will speak at a time. Thank you. I'm going to address right now. You rise to a point of order. I'm going to, I hope, silence both of you. Just a moment.
Thank you.
The council and I have been exchanging things. You know, where is this going? We get into economy and other things. Mr. Miller has said they're looking at the marine life in Penobscot Bay and the bottom and how it affects the economy in here. I believe that's where you're going. The dredging is going to affect the health of marine life and therefore the economic health. And if you're not, then we probably should move away from it.
I'm talking about health, safety, and welfare concerns. if there is not sufficient water to even meet under keel,
then I will stay on that.
Safety and health issue that is part of the purview of this.
Not of this board, though. That is the purview of the Coast Guard and the U.S. Corps of Engineers, and they're the ones that will say whether it comes in or not. And probably I'd ask if you continue along, I'd have one of the other parties of interest to comment on it, probably Mr. Gelinas, but I'll let you continue. But we're not going to get into the dredging part.
Well, all due respect, Chairman, last Tuesday we were told that DCP staff, in fact, operate on the tankers to get the pipeline attached and so forth, and their schematic of the operation includes... Excuse me. Their schematic of the operation includes activities that incorporate the tanker so that they can bring the product aboard towards the tank and through the pipeline. So it certainly seems to me that it's well within the purview of this.
And that activity occurs.
The safety issues associated with insufficient water at the dock at low tide.
And that's where it's going to occur, is at the dock. They will not be on the vessel out at sea or coming up the harbor.
I beg your pardon?
They will be hooking up lines, the valves and things at the dock.
Right, and pumping material with their staff.
At the dock, but not the other part of it.
But if the boat is grounding out, that's a very serious safety, health, and welfare issue that I believe this board has fair view to consider.
But you're talking about offshore.
I'm talking about tied up at the dock using their equipment and their facility to move this product.
But if you're talking about a spill, potentially?
I'm talking about, I don't know what the ramifications are. I'm talking about a tremendous risk, though, to have a ship that isn't supposed to be there actually tied up moving highly volatile material towards the tank.
And I just say, unless you have evidence about potential issues onshore, then it's probably not relevant to our ordinance, and moving on would be a good idea.
And if you also follow the thing, the Coast Guard, the ones that approve whether they will dock and be allowed to come in or not. And I find some, I think, differences here in the numbers, but that's from what the captain of the port states now and the rules. So let's keep it to the land basis here. We recognize you're not going to bring in a 40-foot ship into a 34-foot berth.
I would certainly hope not. And it certainly
so the Coast Guard is not going to allow that.
Well, I don't know how the town of Searsport could allow that, given the threat to safety and welfare of the citizens. The connections aren't designed, as I understand anyway, to handle a ship that's grounded out. The ship is supposed to be floating.
The town of Searsport has no say over what comes into the dock.
But what well,
this board has no say.
Excuse me. I had other material on the natural resources that I could talk about, but I have it in the transcript and the material that you have in front of me, so I think I'll go ahead and skip over much of that. But there's tremendous evidence that the natural resources of Penobscot Bay are really part and parcel of the engine that drives why people want to be here. And in fact lead to our hope and our urge that the planning board find that the application does not meet at least three of the development review ordinance performance standards, and specifically those three would be performance standard, which says that they must show that this preserves and enhances the landscape. They fail to meet that. Standard number two is the relationship of proposed building to the environment. Special attention shall be paid to the bulk, location, height, siding of the building structures, and to such natural features as slope, soil drainage, and important wildlife habitats. You'll see in your packet that Long Cove is an important wildlife habitat. And number 16 of the performance standards has to do with adverse impacts. The development shall not have an unreasonable adverse effect upon the scenic or natural beauty of the area. Shall not have unreasonable effect on important wildlife areas.